If you have a question tonight, shoot me an email at la@lamarzulli.net, la@lamarzulli.net, or give us a call, 800-596-8191, 800-596-8191. Stan Deo is held above top secret security clearance and worked undercover for the FBI. He was part of an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. Stan's diverse background encompasses computer programmer of mainframes in seven languages, PC and Macintosh senior systems analyst, research physicist, both formally and self-educated, marine architect, self-educated, advanced propulsion engineer for marine air and spacecraft, author of two books and six scientific papers, partner in Deo Enterprises, LLC, and it goes on from there, folks. If you want to get to it, check out standeo.com, standeo.com, and see for yourself. I go there pretty much every day. I have the link on my iPad, and I'm always checking him out and seeing what his lovely wife, Holly, has posted, and also any articles of where Stan's been appearing. Stan Deo, thanks so much for coming back on Acceleration Radio.
Hey, my pleasure, sir.
Always good to have you here. Absolutely good to have you here. I'm going to lead off, Stan, with a couple of questions. This is from Rose. She's a steady listener, and she's also my editor for the Cosmic Chess Match, and I just want to give her kudos on the air. Thank you, Rose, for what you're doing, and really appreciate it, and hopefully that book will be out sooner than later. But Rose has three questions, not just one, Stan, and we'll take them one at a time.
Right.
And she writes, "Hi, LA, I have three questions for Mr. Deo. First one, does he believe that the Japanese earthquake was triggered by HAARP technology?"
Well, now that's interesting. I don't personally think that, because why would HAARP be triggering an earthquake in like Chile 3 or 4 weeks before that of such magnitude, and then turn around and hit Japan? And why would we hit our major trading partner, you know, who's still buying U.S. debt and stuff? It doesn't make sense to me. Now, mind you, that's using the U.S.-based HAARP technology. If the Chinese or the Russians or whoever else has got that technology, if they were using it, perhaps they may have triggered it. I don't know.
Interesting. I hope that's a great answer, and that's certainly honest and forthright on your part. Question number two, door number three. Does he think the New Madrid or San Andreas will be triggered the same way?
Well, I don't know whether it will be triggered by mankind's technology, but certainly there are things happening to our planet that are a natural progression of the aging of the planet. One of those is the expansion of the diameter of the planet, which happens infrequently, but when it does it in a big way. So I can't answer that.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, you talk about the expansion of the planet. What do you mean by that? Are we looking at something like that now?
Well, I'm seeing signs of it. The earthquakes all over the various places do indicate a stretching of the planet, and severe stretching. And in some cases, diving in, you know, where the plates are crunching in as the stretching occurs, not uniformly, but in bulges. The ring of fire, or the arc of fire of the Pacific, is a real good indicator of what's happening to the planet. And I'm thinking now then that after Japan, that we might see bigger ones, maybe a rather large one, in Indonesia, right on into New Guinea or around to Fiji in that area, and then back over to the northwest of the United States, where the Juan de Fuca plate is off Oregon and Washington shore, and then back down later, I think, to North Island, New Zealand. We're seeing signs of it as we're on the air here right now, that Mount Ruapehu, which is one of three active volcanoes right next to Lake Taupo, which is a caldera, somewhat dormant, but not extinct.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting hot, and I flew over that one in a single-engine plane with a pilot a few years back when we were down in New Zealand, when the lake was bubbling, and now it's bubbling again. It's a sulfuric acid lake anyway, but it's interesting.
You know, people have... And I keep saying that the United States is especially the West Coast, with some sort of a large tremor happening here at some point. What are your thoughts on that, specifically California?
Well, California is not isolated from the Juan de Fuca Cascades Fault Zone. Mm-hmm. That fault zone is nearly 600 miles long, stretching from up above in the northern part of Washington State inland all the way down to Northern California. Now, if it goes down as far as, I think it's Eureka, and triggers the fault at the top part of the Juan de Fuca up in that area, then yes, it could shake the heck out of it. And let's face it, the fault lines, and there are a number of them around the San Andreas fault line there, if they are shaken with an earthquake, a Richter 9 up in the Juan de Fuca area up in Washington, that will certainly give them a chance to release their energy. I tell you what, it's rather interesting because the earthquake in Japan at Fukushima, when that happened within, just a very short time, like less than an hour, I saw helicopters going crazy over in Yellowstone. Now, this may not mean much to your listeners, but here's the problem. The earthquake happens. We get the primary and secondary waves that go through the earth, and people pick it up and record these things. But why would only certain seismometers over in the Yellowstone Park area, and there's only five of them that did this out of about 20 or so, why would five of them go berserk and have major tremor activity showing them at the very same time, very same pattern? Now, in fact, if you look at the images page I've put up for the show tonight, you will see down at line at row 3 and 4, the seismographs, the helicopters that I took from Yellowstone on the 11th, March 11th, when the Fukushima quake occurred. Now, it means that those five sensors were over an area of the Yellowstone caldera where the magma down underneath there was physically connected to a fluid magma all the way across to Japan. You know, in other words, down in our mantle somewhere, because it was like a wave traveling in a hydraulic system, and it only hit those five areas. And then after this happened, I saw, and you can see it in the helicopter graphs, you can see little harmonic ripple tremors that followed days after that in those five sensors. Now, that means that the magma down underneath Yellowstone was trying to push itself up toward the surface and catching on the vents it was moving up through, like when you rub rubber against a glass. It kind of squeaks, jumps. And that's what we're seeing is harmonic tremors. Now, it's really quite fascinating that just those five the helicopters out of all those at Yellowstone were tied to the Japan quake. This is spooky because it's kind of like anything can happen game now, that when you see pressure being passed in the magma over to a volcano that we know when it went last, major eruption anyway, 630,000 years ago, it covered 2/3 of the United States in ash. So it's something to watch.
Let's hold it right there, Stan. I'm gonna come back on Yellowstone because it's been a concern of mine. That puts us into a nuclear winter. Let's discuss that when we come back. We're at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Acceleration Radio. I'm your intrepid host, L.A. Marzulli. Our guest tonight, Stan Deo. Got a question for him? Shoot me an email, la@lamarzulli.net, or call us 800-596-8191. Keep it right here, folks. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149. $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
There are 9 kinds of water: hard water, raw water, boiled water, salt water, rain water, snow water, filtered water, deionized water, and distilled water. Only one of these kinds of water is good for you. Distilled water is water which has been turned into vapor so that all its impurities are left behind. Then, by condensing, it is turned back to pure water. It is the only water which is pure. The only water free from all impurities. The choice is clear. Dr. Alan E. Bannock. Order your tabletop water distiller for $139.99. Postpaid, it comes with everything you need to get pure distilled water. Go to superstore.theamericanvoice.com. That's superstore.theamericanvoice.com. Order now.
Can your family survive a food shortage lasting 2 weeks, 6 months, or maybe longer? Sound far-fetched? We live in precarious times. There is an ever-increasing possibility of food shortages caused by terrorist attacks, natural disasters, truck strikes, or monetary collapse. You owe it to yourself and family to prepare, and you can by getting a supply of our long-storing, freeze-dried, and dehydrated foods. Our foods are time-tested to store for decades, require a minimum of time and energy to prepare while maintaining superior nutritional value, freshness, and taste. Our foods were designed for the space program and are in constant use today by our own nuclear submarine service. Contact the Freeze Dry Guy today at freezedryguy@landset.com. That's freezedryguy@landset.com or call 530-265-8333. 530-265-8333 and let them know you heard it on American Voice Radio.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Intrepid host L.A. Marzulli. This is Acceleration Radio. Our guest tonight, Stan Deo. We were talking about, and you know, I've got it right up here. I went to your site, Stan, standeo.com. And if you go there right on top, folks, it'll say Acceleration Radio. And right next to that, there's a little thing you can click and images, and that's what we're talking about. Fantastic homework on your part, Stan. I am blown away by this little treat for us because we can follow right along with you. I'm going to give everybody about a minute to get there. Go to Stan Deo's website, standeo.com. You'll see Acceleration Radio right on the end of that sentence. There's a little link. Just click on that and you'll get to the images that we're talking about. So the caldera at Yellowstone has been a great concern of mine. I mean, there's certainly that one. There's the Barabunga in Iceland. I know there's one in Africa, one in South America. All these are 30, 40, 50 mile wide calderas. I mean, they're huge. Something like this decides to blow, and you said it right before the break. We're looking at an ash cloud that sends us into some sort of a nuclear winter. How close do you think we are?
Well, I don't know that it's going to be as bad as it was 630,000 years ago, and there are some mitigating circumstances this time. If you take into consideration how it was linked hydrodynamically to, you know, with the magma to the Fukushima quake clear across the North Pacific, then if we were to have eruptions and or earthquakes on the western coast of the United States, that might relieve some of the pressure on Yellowstone. So if it did erupt, that it would be much less than it was in that massive eruption 630,000 years ago. But there's another caldera that I think will be erupting with full force, and that's in North Island, New Zealand, and it's called Lake Taupo now. But the activity down there, we've been watching it. You know, you heard the damage was down there a few weeks back at the top of the South Island quake damage. But when you start seeing the Ruapehu thing volcano heat up, then you've got to start monitoring the temperatures that they're reading at Lake Taupo, because it's water sitting over the top of a huge dormant volcano. The last time it erupted was in 187 AD, I think it was. Wow. And when it erupted, the Chinese astronomers in the northern hemisphere reported 3 days of darkness from the ash cloud it threw up. Total darkness. Now, that is a big thing. And
that's
not
huge.
Only, well, I've had dream visions of this. You know, I've walked it when it happened in the dream visions, as have many other people who actually live in New Zealand, and the Maori Indians, who their kahuna woman verified what I had seen in the dream vision. There's going to be a massive eruption of that, but just before it does, there will be a scandal over a sub-grade or inferior-grade wood that was used in building a very, very large dam. And I think she was implying that it meant the Chinese Three Gorges Dam. It might be another one now, but anyway, there will be a big scandal over misuse of funds on that. And she says, as soon as you see that in the press, know that Lake Taupo is going to erupt and throw, you know, like house-sized boulders for miles. It's going to take out half of the North Island of New Zealand, and plus give us a bit of a nuclear winter. So that's that one there is, I'd say, within the next 7 to 10 years, and even closer as we watch the events unfold. The Yellowstone quake, or Yellowstone caldera, certainly will be, I think, mitigated by release of pressure on the west coast. But what that means is, instead of having as much ash cloud and as much damaged area east and south of Yellowstone, we're going to see a lot more damage over in the coast area of the United States. I think we'll see at least six volcanoes erupting at once down through the Cascades, all the way down. You know, it's coming, and it's soon. What I'm quoting to you here is figures that I've gotten from the USGS and from volcanologists. They know that big fault zone off of Oregon and Washington, that Juan de Fuca plate zone, is over 55 years overdue. For release, and that they have already calculated at least a Richter 9 earthquake out of that. Now, it will produce tsunamis. It will tear down buildings. It will wreck 600 miles, you know, long inland from northern Washington State down to the northern part of California. And as you asked a while ago, if that does trigger the San Andreas and associated faults, and there are many of them, then we're going to see the destruction continue down into California and perhaps break up California into islands and submerge parts of it. Which brings me to another point. I don't have this image up on the screen, but it is on our website if you search for Hopi map. It is on that.
Yeah, it is. It's towards the bottom. I'm looking at it right now. Right.
Okay. Now, that I did that map from by analyzing topography or elevation map of the United States. And I, on the right side of the map, you see that brown line running down through the kind of the left of center. Mm-hmm. That's higher ground. And over on the right, where you see the green and the blues on the right side of the map, those are showing sea level incursions. If the sea level rose 200 feet or 500 feet, and the 200 foot one is the blue, the 500 foot is the green, and that shows you how a massive quake along the New Madrid, if could certainly augment this. And if we had the sea level rise for a couple of reasons I'll tell you about in a minute, that these areas would be submerged and the Great Lakes might actually empty directly into the Gulf of Mexico. On the left side, now that blue over there is not the same color blue, it's a brighter blue. That is over a mile deep, or like a mile height. And the only way that we could have that, I believe, is if those portions of the coast break and fall into the sea, and there's a subsidence. And as the Bible says, the high shall be made low and the low shall be made high. Now, the reason I did this is because the Hopi told us, Holly and I, when we were down there, that before the changes that are occurring now end, that the Hopi will go between their three mesas in canoes or boats because the water will be that high. So I can't see the water sea level rising that high, but I can see the landmass dropping as various plate tectonic actions take place and things dive down too low, or you know, lower than they are now. But it would have to be almost a mile dive down to let the water go between their mesas. So this is why we call it the Hopi sea level map, because we ran tests just to see what would have to happen to do that. And strangely enough, if you've looked at some of the kind of new age maps and forecasts of what's going to happen to the United States after the Earth changes, they are very close to what we're looking at here.
Which is very concerned. I'm very concerned and alarmed by that, in the sense that, you know, my wife and I had the house up for sale three different times since the year 2000 to try to get out of here. And we had it the last time right before the bubble burst, and we were like right on the cusp. And we would have really done very well, and not retired, but semi-retired if I had wanted to. All that's completely changed. And here we are. We can't get out, can't sell it, and we're stuck here at the 800-foot level. And, I mean, yeah, I guess we're just supposed to ride it out, and we'll just see what happens. And, you know, our hands are in the hands of, you know, our fate are in the hands of the Lord. And I guess we'll just wait and see what happens. We did try to get out, Stan, three different times. I just knew something was coming. And yet, you know, we tried, and he held us here for whatever reason. I think part of that reason might be is my relationship with my good friend and co-producer Richard Shaw. We're doing the Watchers series. We have UFOs, a real burgeoning, not going away, and of course Watchers 2, Signs in the Heavens and Earth. We'll be talking about the very things that you and I are discussing here on Acceleration Radio in that DVD. But I digress, with a thousand apologies to Stan. One more question from Rose. Here, Stan. This should be a real quick one. And I've heard this too, and I think it's, my gut feeling tells me it's absolute nonsense, but let me throw it out to you. Are there 450,000 Chinese troops waiting in Mexico, 60 miles south of Laredo, Texas, to invade the U.S. after some catastrophe like an earthquake?
I don't know. I've seen the reports that the trucker allegedly saw these things and reported it. I don't know exactly, but I'll tell you what the Hopi elders told us when we were down there. They said that the United States is going to enter a stage of like civil cultural war between various factions very soon, and it will tear the country apart. And when we are at our weakest, we will be invaded by the Chinese, the Russians, and some other Middle Eastern countries, and they will decimate the United States, for most of it anyway. But there will be portions in the Southwest and, the Four Corners region, where Colorado, Utah, that area, which will be a gathering point for survivors after the invaders leave the United States, because they're going to ruin it so much that nobody will want to live in most of it anyway. So they are saying Chinese, and we know that the Chinese have, they own the Panama Canal down there. They've got a port in the West Coast here in California. The Russians have been given a tour. I mean, we were told when they were taking their leading generals on a tour through our defense facilities and our, municipal police services and emergency response services all down the West Coast. And that's going back probably 5-6 years. We were told that when they were doing it. So, are they down there? I don't know. I'm not going to get any more excited about it than I am about what the Hopi have told about the invasion of the United States. This does seem to support a little bit of the alleged dream vision or day vision that was given to George Washington about the United States being overrun and almost destroyed, but the defenders holding out in the middle of the United States, which is kind of where Colorado is, and that's where the CIA have, and some of the other government departments have been putting continuance of their departments into Denver and underground facilities for a number of years now. Mm-hmm. So this might be it. Now, I want to get back to your problem very quickly. About getting out of there. We have other friends as well in California and in the same situation as yourself. If it is a tsunami that hits you, then you're going to have problems. But there's a way you can get rubber boats, things you can inflate, inflatable plastic 55-gallon drums. You can put stuff in and lash them to your boat. you can prepare now to just float out of there if water does rise up to your level, not in a tsunami, but in a natural subsidence or that kind of thing. I do believe there will be islands, that not everything will fall into the sea, but there will be some islands. If your 800-foot altitude is not enough and it goes down, then float away with your emergency supplies. One lady, good lady, we've talked to her a number of times, her neighbor has a yacht, a big yacht, parked in his backyard, and they're a long way from he's parked it there, and he's with the fire department, and they're saying, okay, look, come dive in our boat should this water hit us, because none of us can move out, so let's all go in a boat together. Wow. So there are ways to try to mitigate the situation, so don't give up.
Yeah, never give up, never surrender. We have a call. Kate from Idaho. Kate, thank you so much for listening to Acceleration Radio. You're on live with Stan Dale. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, a little bit of both. Hi, L.A., and hi, Stan.
Hi, Kate.
Years ago, I worked for a municipality in the Willamette Valley in Oregon. And as such, I had access to inundation maps for the Willamette Valley in the event of the big dams in the Cascade Mountains failing. And there are several of them up there, big ones, very, very deep dams, lots of water. Anyway, I started writing letters to Salem, Oregon about what I saw on those maps, and please begging them to get a warning system like tsunami sirens for the event of dam failure. Because the worst case event, I lived in Eugene. The worst case event, if every dam above Eugene were to break, like as the result of settling from an earthquake, because they're all landfill, there would be 40 feet of water over most of Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
That would stretch from the all the way across the Willamette Valley to the coastal range. There would be rubbish, dead bodies, dead animals everywhere, because nobody's ever told anything over there. Okay, that was a comment. Now, the question I have, I know you used to do your earthquake maps from the Navy. You got me to watch an earthquake, as a matter of fact. But anyhow, I saw a thing on a website today that said that it was a U.S. Navy flood map that shows something similar to what your map here on the screen. Different, but, you know, same general idea.
Oh, wow.
You know if that is accurate. I know you have connections in that area, and I'd like to know if the Navy really has that map out there somewhere.
Now, where did you see the map?
They did not list any link to it.
Ah, well, where did you see the picture, though? I mean, was it email or internet or where?
Yeah, it was on the internet, a website. I can't remember the name of it now, but I wrote to them and asked them to please post. I saved it, matter of fact. Please post the link to that map, and if they can't post it, then basically they're fear-mongering.
Sure.
And,
well, when you can't get the you trace it down. These days, I kind of get suspicious of these things, and
I do too.
I don't want people to be frightened. If you give in to fear, the battle's over. If it were a U.S. Navy map, there would probably be some indications on there other than saying, you know, I'm a Navy map. I mean, it just, you know, I think I know the one you're talking about. Kind of. Had big blue floodplain up over Oregon and Washington, Northern California.
Yeah, it showed the whole center of the United States clear up to the Great Lakes as blue.
Yeah, well, that they could have gotten from Lori Torrey's map, from Gordon Michael Scallion's map, you know, a number of maps.
They were on there also.
Ah.
Their map.
Okay. Well, look, don't worry about it. You know, people keep asking, Holly and I, where is a safe place? You know, to write out these things. And in my opinion, there's no safe place on earth.
I agree. I totally agree with that. Yep.
People are
anyway,
saying.
I'm going to let you get back to your dialogue, and thank you very much for taking
Thanks for calling in, Kate. Really appreciate
it. Thank you, Kate. Thank you. You know, L.A., people shouldn't, especially Christians, should not be given to a spirit of fear, because we know the Lord is in control of these things. And people say to me, look, you live in Pueblo West in Colorado. Is that a safe place? And I say, well, I can't tell you. I mean, there are certain things that look like it might be protected from this threat or that threat. But I'm here, Holly and I are here, because I had dream visions, which I assume were from the Lord. They were so specific and told me when I was in Australia about the name of this place and showed me how to look out the window of this place. And I'd never been here in my life before and didn't know it existed. So maybe each one of us, L.A. and myself and others who are in places where we wonder whether it's safe or not, should not worry about that, because we're where the Lord needs us to do what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I certainly, like you, L.A., we've got connections here, you know, with our postal, our shipping, our printing, everything else. It works just fine where we are. You know, our high-speed internet access, you know, all that we wouldn't have if we were out in a farm somewhere hiding. You know, we couldn't do it. But now then we can help others to prepare, you know, physically and spiritually, which we're doing as best we can, all over the planet from right here. So, hey, you know.
That's a good thing.
Safe is with the Lord, and that's it.
Amen. I totally agree. I have another question here from Deborah. Deborah, thanks so much for writing in and listening to Acceleration Radio. She writes, a friend of mine believes that HAARP technology was involved in causing the Japan earthquake. There is something he keeps track of that shows when HAARP fires up, and he says that it fired up at around the time the earthquake happened. Does Stan have any comment on that? Is it possible that HAARP could have contributed to that earthquake in Japan or the Haiti earthquake?
Well, look, the problem with the HAARP-type technology is when one country uses it, and if it were only one country using it, you could probably say, yes, they're directing force fields to certain parts of the planet. When you have two or more stations operating, I suspect what happens is that they play a game trying to figure out how to counter the other guy's moves after the fact almost, and that produces kind of unpredictable results, or maybe they can predict it. But let's say that the Chinese were operating their HAARP trying to hit our west coast to make the Juan de Fuca or the San Andreas Fault release. Okay, so the United States and their HAARP facility here, and perhaps something like it down in Australia or wherever, said, oh, look, the Chinese are building up, you know, a field that's going to hit us there. We better counter that. So then they go for a counter and said, shove it back at them. Well, halfway between us and them would be Japan, maybe. You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
So I just can't believe that our government would intentionally zap one of our best trading partners and, you know, the only people kind of helping our dollar keep afloat, you know, with HAARP. I much prefer to think that what is happening is that we were using defensive moves against an aggressor. Certainly HAARP can be used in some mighty ways, you know, for weather warfare, steering hurricanes just slightly by overheating one side or the other with a heating column coming down out of the ionosphere when they heat it up with the frequencies that they punch up into the ionosphere with. It's a very interesting and specific science that they're using. In fact, it was first proposed by Nikola Tesla.
I was going to say Nikola Tesla, yeah.
Oh, look, amazing. His stuff was brilliant.
Yeah, the guy was amazing. His private records are still whisked away by the FBI after he died, and as far as I know, they've never been released. So very interesting stuff. We have a caller here, Stan Richard from Long Island. Richard, welcome to Acceleration Radio. Thanks for calling in. Do you have a question or comment for Stan?
Hey, how you doing, L.A.? God bless you. Stan, I love your work, listen to many of your shows, read a lot of your work. I have a little question for you. I don't know if you're familiar with tetrahedral mathematics, and how could that possibly correlate with the geological anomalies that we're seeing today? If you could elaborate on it, I'd really appreciate that.
Thanks, Richard. Right.
Well, look, I think I know what you're talking about. It's been bandied around for some time about the mathematics and structure inside planets. And no one died and left me in charge of physics and understanding it all. But I much prefer looking at the structure and behavior, the dynamics of planets and star systems, using the gravitational model that I've been devising for years now and putting up on the website. In fact, if you look at the images for the show tonight, down about just underneath the earthquake pictures, or the size of the pictures, you can see some of the drawings I've put from a new paper I'm writing on the hydrodynamic or fluid nature of gravity and the missing gravitational field that NASA discovered. I explain why that happens, and I think this works better than the tetrahedral mathematics thing. And it certainly, I don't know about certain degrees and latitudes, whether those are specific in any planet, but what I'm showing you here, it does work, and it does explain a lot of things about the kind of legendary hollow earth theory, about why Pioneer 10 and 11 out at about 45 times the distance of the earth from the sun started slowing down and pulling back in with a weak gravitational force. And, you know, NASA was confused about this, at least publicly anyway. And this shows that weak force, how it organizes things. So it's not the tetrahedral mathematics I just have not bought into yet. Okay, that's that. I may later, when I learn more about how the fluid version of gravity works, we may be able to tie it back to specific latitudes and behavior inside. But at this point, I see concentric shells, voids inside stars, galaxies, planets, moons. And as you can see on the images we've got on the site today, Richard.
Fascinating.
There are north poles of Mars. There's north pole of a moon of Saturn, the Tethys 2. There's Saturn's north pole. These have spiral patterns on them, every one of them. And even asteroids, some of the larger ones that have cooled and are just, you know, kind of dead now, they have evidence of polar holes on them, where my theory predicts has occurred. Is that polar regions, north and south pole of the spin of a planet or a galaxy or a star, these polar regions periodically open up a little bit and then close. And together they probably do this. And as the thing gets older, the galaxy, the star, the planet, as it gets older, these holes open and close until at the end they probably either break up and you have an asteroid belt, or they close and you have a solid moon with a little north pole kind of concentric spiral pattern, as you see on Mars and some of the others that I put onto the website there. If you'll look at the solar system unified outer orbits or unfilled outer orbits, which is a golden kind of looking disc with ripples in it.
Well done, by the way.
All right. Okay. Thank you, sir. Did you click on that and look at the big picture?
Looking at it right now, it's just fantastic.
Are you looking at the big picture?
Yes, I am. Really cool.
All right, well, what you're seeing there are the planets, and you can see that they're obviously planets. There's some purple planets, and those are planets that are sitting in orbits that are empty, but they are discrete orbits, like quantum-level orbits that have to be around our star at this time. And if we were to try to park another planet somewhere there, it wouldn't hold that orbit.
Very, very interesting, Stan. We'll kick back on that, the purple planets, when we come back. Fascinating stuff. Folks, you're listening to Acceleration Radio. Our special guest tonight, Stan Dale. I'm your intrepid host, L.A. Marzulli, and we're journeying into some very interesting information tonight. Keep it right here, folks. We'll see you at the next hour. We have a whole other hour to go. Tons of questions in the email. Q, want to get on the show tonight? I'll give you that number on the other side of the break. And thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you on the other side.
Can your family survive a food shortage lasting 2 weeks, 6 months, or maybe longer? Sound far-fetched? We live in precarious times. There is an ever-increasing possibility of food shortages caused by terrorist attacks, natural disasters, truck strikes, or monetary collapse. You owe it to yourself and family to prepare, and you can by getting a supply of our long-storing, freeze-dried, and dehydrated foods. Our foods are time-tested to store for decades, require a minimum of time and energy to prepare while maintaining superior nutritional value, freshness, and taste. Our foods were designed for the space program and are in constant use today by our own nuclear submarine service. Contact the Freeze Dry Guy today at freezedryguy@landset.com. That's freezedryguy@landset.com or call 530-265-8333. 530-265-8333. And let them know you heard it on American Voice Radio.
I got held up in the briars, and that's when I looked up and saw it. And it made no noise. The trees didn't move or the leaves blow away. Ricky Sorrell, Stephen to the Lights. I went into sort of a shocked tailspin as I realized that the abductions were real. I said to myself, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, repeatedly for about 6 months. Dr. David Jacobs. They always communicated to me telepathically. An idea would come into my mind to go out and take pictures, or they would have me start drawing symbols, which was some type of language I had no knowledge of. They called it light language. The Alien Interviews is a hard-hitting exposé conducted with 17 people who have had direct contact with the so-called extraterrestrial presence. The Alien Interviews is now available in paperback for only $10. Get informed, as UFOs are real, burgeoning, and not going away. Go to lamarzulli.net. That's lamarzulli.net. And pick up your copy of The Alien Interviews, www.lamarzulli.net.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your intrepid host, L.A. Marzulli. This is Acceleration Radio. Thanks for listening tonight. Got a stack of emails I'm desperately trying to get to. Stan, right before the break, we were talking about the purple planets. And give us your website and how people can get there to these images. It's very simple, standale.com. But Stan, just give us your website and your own voice and direct people to these images because they're just fascinating.
All right. Well, the website is standeo.com. It's standeo.com. And if you go there, you'll see standeo.com and a bunch of pictures of books and things that we have on that front page. And right underneath the pictures of the books, you'll see where it says Stan Guests on L.A. Marzulli's The Acceleration, Wednesday, April 6th. That's tonight. And just to the right of that, you'll see in blue, inside brackets, Show Images. And if you click on that, it will open up the icon page of all of the things I'm talking about. If you click on any of these images, you'll get a bigger image of it so that you can look at it in greater detail. And what LA and I have been talking about was the image on the left side of the three columns, and it's down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's down 6 rows down, and you can't miss it. It looks kind of like a cutaway of a big water splash, but it's yellowish, yellow gold. And if you click on it, it'll bring up an enlarged picture of the thing all cut in half. And it's our solar system with filled and unfilled orbits. And what you see there as purple are unfilled orbits that have formed when our sun is spinning by the containment or weaker gravitational field that NASA's just recently discovered. Now, I have an equation. It's a simple algebraic progression equation, which I developed, which is much more accurate than what is called Bode's law for telling where orbits have to be. And using that equation, I was able to calculate the existing orbits of planets and then the empty orbits that have not been filled. And it I took it way on out beyond where we have the Kuiper belt and out as far out as 1,000 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun to the edge of the Oort cloud. What I found in doing this was that at 75 times the distance of Earth, there is an unfilled orbit. And that unfilled, well, we say it's unfilled, we don't know, but it would contain a planet. If there was a planet in that area, it would be stable in that orbit. And the interesting thing about this, LA, is that the orbital time of a planet in that ring would be 3,600 years, plus or minus about 12. Now, that's spooky, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, very much so. It sounds a lot like Planet X to me.
Well, it does. Now, for some time, astronomers have known that there's some big mass that is kind of squashing the orbit of Neptune. And Neptune, I must tell you, it's a little bit shy of where it should be in the orbital plot that all the other planets adhere to in the equation. And Uranus has a slight deviation in its orbit as well, but it still falls within the range of the equation. So Neptune is being perturbed or influenced by a much larger mass out there somewhere, but nobody seems to be able to see it. And there's kind of a little bobble in its orbit, and its orbit is shrunken a wee bit, you know, a few percent by what it should be, according to the rest of the planet's orbits and their positions. So if there is a planet out there orbiting the sun, you know, at 3,600 years, it might be a planet, or it might be a cometary-type planet, you know, the one that dives into the solar system, goes around the sun, and comes back out with a very elliptical and eccentric-type orbit. If that's the case, then we tried running simulations of that with equations for planetary motion, how you predict where they are, and we found that if there were a planet out there, that it would transit inside Earth's orbit and Mars' orbit, go around the sun, and come back out. If it's that planet or that comet or whatever, it would only take about 11 years for it to dive in to our solar system from a high angle and dive in around the sun again. It would take 11 years before it left, plus or minus a year or so with the error factors.
But
what I'm trying to make is if there is something coming for 2012 or whenever the guys say it's coming reasonably soon, we should be seeing evidence of it somewhere. And we have been getting unconfirmed reports of amateur astronomers finding something out there, and we found one report that was bogus. It took us a while to decipher it, but I do think that we will see some severe changes because of other factors in the solar system, in the sun itself, and in the Earth and its aging process, and the magnetic field deviations, and the spin axis deviations of the Earth, and possibly the expansion of the Earth, like I was mentioning before, which is part of the aging of a planet. Mm-hmm. If you look at that, the images page there, look to the right of it, and you'll see a red core and a green outer core, and then a blue kind of half ring around it. That's part of a movie I've generated, which you can't see now because it's going to be in the paper, but it's showing how the Earth has this invisible but very weak gravitational kind of spinning fluid field that holds all the atoms together so that they can combine their gravitational pulls and make the normal mass of our planet. But it shows a hollow Earth or a void in the Earth, with that red core being the center of the Earth and the green being the mantle that we live on. Now, in this part of the animation, I've just grabbed one frame out of it. You can see slight reddish glows at the north and south pole. My theory predicts that when this happens, that in an active planet or a star or whatever, that heat or high concentrations of energy will burst out through these holes when they open up periodically, and then when the holes close, you don't get it. Now, for those of you who study Stephen Hawking's work, he has been struggling with the problem with supermassive black holes at the center of every galaxy, and why periodically they open up and shoot gamma ray bursts out the polar regions. This would explain it. And so I'm taking on the big guys with this, but I'm doing it with animations so you can see. You don't have to have, you know, a degree in mathematics or matrix algebra or anything to see what I'm talking about. I'm animating so you can see what I'm talking about, how it works. And I am running behind on getting it released. I should have done it this month, but I've just been detained by other things that we had to do in the business, and you know, caught the flu and all that kind of rubbish. But anyway,
can't wait to see that. We've got a call, fascinating, just absolutely fascinating information, Stan. We have caller Frank from California. Frank, thanks so much for calling in. You're on the air with Stan Dale.
Hey, LA Stan, fantastic show. Big fan, check Stan's side and your side every day. I was listening to Jeannie Hayes on New World Order, Disorder, that comes on before your show, because I wanted to make sure I got to listen to your show.
Okay.
And at 6:36, she had a guest on, and he said some stuff that really blew my mind. One of them was that the Hopi Indians tried to go to the League of Nations and tell them about Planet X, I thought it was, and there were prophecies about what's going to happen to the United States.
They wouldn't listen.
And they wouldn't listen. And then he said they also tried, I think it was 1979, he said, to the UN, and they wouldn't listen either.
Yep.
This gentleman, I can't remember who his name is, but he said that the powers to be knew about planets when the Orbiter 10 went out to find it in 1979. And since 1979, they have been planning for Planet X to come into our orbit and wreak havoc. And that's why they have been building the underground bunkers with our finances and doing all this stuff, because they know what's going to happen to the Earth. And maybe that's why the Navy's come out with that redistribution map of where the landmass for America would be when it's covered by the floods. But anyhow, I'll listen to you guys take that up, and God bless you.
Frank, I don't really think that alleged map by the Navy is really a real deal. It just, the resolution, the production of it is just definitely substandard for a naval data, you know, map of any sort. As far as them knowing that there was a Planet X in 1979 or whenever, I don't know. I haven't had access to that. But I do know that if I were in charge of a major nation like the United States, or, you know, as a consortium of major nations, if we were able to know these things and know that it was an extinction level event coming, that we could not afford to take the risk of telling everybody officially and publicly to prepare for this, because it would create anarchy and break down any hope that we would have of rebuilding the population of the planet and the planet itself after the event is over. It's kind of like the 2012 movie, you know. There's going to be a certain number of people, if they know about it, I'm sure they would have picked key scientists, philosophers, you know, farmers, producers of all kind, and mark them to sequester them for the event when it comes, and they would just go pick them up and put them in there. That would mean that a lot of other people would have to fend for themselves. Now, if I were in charge of one of those people doing that, I would also have, you know, me personally, I would have the compassion to know that I've got to at least give them a leak or several leaks so that the people who are thinkers out there and realize these things might also prepare the best they could in their circumstance to endure the calamity and come out the other side alive and, you know, be able to help rebuild the planet. It's a hard decision. It's like a lifeboat syndrome, where you've got a full lifeboat and there are people all around trying to grab over the side and sink you too. You have to kick them off and say, look, the lifeboat can only handle this many. Now, that may seem like a cruel thing, but we all live and we all die. It's just that you kind of like to think that it's going to be a long life. So, you know, You just got to fit into the pattern of things. We've been warned. There are a lot of leaks that have come out. Nothing official. So you make preparations. That's why Holly's book, the Dare to Prepare book, is absolutely just racing off the shelves by the caseload. I'm not kidding. We just got her new printing in last night, and already a third of it is gone.
That's great.
But people are suddenly realizing, you know, we better prepare for something. And that is good, because it's an unofficial warning to get prepared. And if you look at this 8-10 state joint exercise being run over in the New Madrid area and say, why is that? You look at the 100-some-odd million meals that FEMA openly ordered and then canceled and maybe filled privately or whatever for survival meals for the New Madrid area. These are ways to make people say, what's going on? Why are they doing that? And it's an unofficial way to say, look, maybe if you think about it, you ought to get prepared yourself. But the ultimate preparation, LA, you and I both know this, is your spiritual preparation for the life that comes after this. And that's why we have the Cosmic Conspiracy and the Dare to Prepare book as our lead books, and everything we talk about and deal with in people is to prepare physically and spiritually. And spiritually is the ultimate. You know, you've got to look down the road. So.
And how do they apprise themselves of those two books, Stan? How can they get those?
Oh, yeah, I guess that'd be a good idea. StanDeo.com, that website, you'll see Dare to Prepare is kind of if you look at the books on the top of the page there and click on the Dare to Prepare, it'll give you a big picture, and you can click on that big picture and get even bigger, and you'll see this really neat cover that I designed for Holly, and she wrote the book, but I designed the cover. But it was like showing that you're gambling. The poker chips are valuable things, but the cards you're being dealt are like earthquakes, nuclear war, solar coronal mass ejections, magma flowing from, you know, tornadoes. You can see it on the cards. And over on the side is a little hourglass. It's almost run out. And so it tells you pictorially, you need this book, and you've got very little time to get it and to act on what you read in it. So, yeah, they can go there. And we've just reprinted the final edition of the Cosmic Conspiracy as well, which has...
Congratulations.
Well, yeah, it's... you know, that book has been with me. It's kind of been a life venture with me after I wrote it, gosh, it was in 77. TV, lectures, radios. The book's been translated by other companies for us into French and German. And there was one Greek, I think, but I think the earthquake killed the translator when they had a big Greek earthquake. But anyway, you know, we've sold it in 26 countries, and it's just gone and taken a life of its own.
But congratulations.
Those two books, well, yeah, I'd certainly like, thank you for that, but I'd certainly like to hear the Lord say, Stanley, you did a good job with what we gave you to work with.
There you go. There you go.
That's the major kudos.
We've got a stack of emails here in my queue, so please don't call in right now. We've just got so many emails I want to try to get to. So let me just, you know, try to give some staccato answers. Let's see if we can answer of these. This is from Susan. She writes, Dear L.A. and Stan, do you think a Temple Mountain UFO was a signal, a trigger?
Quite possibly. UFO reports have increased enormously this year, so I'm expecting the UFO deception to start almost immediately.
That was a good UFO
video. I have to tell you, I looked at it from several angles, and I thought, boy, now that, you know, the acceleration curve and everything for that light was brilliant. It was really well done if it was a fake, but it doesn't appear to be.
Yeah, we're still trying to chase that down. We've had lots of people look at it. We're not sure, you know, what exactly we're looking at yet. I have not, you know, given like a stamp of approval. I said it looks real, could be, but we don't know. And that's, I still maintain that. I mean, it's fascinating. It why now? Why there? But you know, there's some questions there that have not been answered yet. And so we have to wait. Let's ask, here's another question. This is from Gary. Gary, thanks so much for listening. Hello, L.A. Could you ask Stan if there's any evidence of a quake of a New Madrid fault line prior to 1811, 1812? Thanks, Gary. Stan, anything, any earthquake evidence of a quake on the New Madrid fault line?
I'm not sure. I watched a documentary the other night on that where the geologists were digging down into the New Madrid Fault, into the sand layers that had formed. And I'm not sure whether the levels that they showed preceded the 1811 or, you know, those quakes for the New Madrid that we know about. I suspect that they did, but I'm sorry, I can't say positively.
That's all you can do is, you know, I thought it was a great answer. Thank you, Stan.
Well, you see, L.A., that whole area has a bunch of right angle faults that they didn't even know existed.
Hmm.
And it was a leftover of an old geological process that occurs mainly out in the Atlantic Ocean, but it occurred inland there and a long time ago. So the fault structure was formed, you know, like hundreds of thousands of years ago on their time scale anyway.
Okay. Here's another question from Mary in Wisconsin. Mary, thanks so much for listening to Acceleration Radio. Does Stan think that radiation from Japan poses a threat to the United States in the short term or in the long term? Great question, Mary.
Well, again, I'm not on the site. We do get emails from people who are either being sent there to do work or already there. Holly's been advising people on how to filter their water over in Japan to get rid of the radioactive particles. The problems are already starting to manifest in that certain fishes that escape and migrate have been irradiated in the water that have dumped from the reactor there. So it's into the food chain, and like it or not, crisis of this magnitude in a nuclear facility will affect the whole planet long term. You can measure the radioactivity in your water and your food and stuff. In the water, you can filter out the particulates, but depending upon what happens after the water that has been exposed at the reactors leaves, it might have a higher concentration of, say, like tritium, which is a form of hydrogen, and that puts a background radiation level. I mean, that's there normally in seawater and water anyway. But I guess maybe, hopefully, our bodies will build some kind of a tolerance to low-level deposits, but we're going to see it in our food chain. There's no way of getting around it. It's going to be here.
Alarming. Another question from Lynn Weldon. She writes, L.A., can you ask Stan about the nuclear particle or force that was to be announced today? They're describing it as something totally unexpected. Stan, I haven't heard anything about that, but I was away from the computer most of the day. Did you hear anything about that?
No, I was working most of the day too. I didn't hear that. Holly, did you hear anything about some kind of a nuclear force or some new force being announced today? No, she's the news buff and didn't. Yeah, she said I've been working all day too. She didn't look either. But I'd be interested to know what that.
Yeah, I would too. Very interesting.
Because these things here that I've shown you on the planetary models, there is I want to make this point clear. If you have a glass of water and you throw some iron filings down the bottom, iron powder would be better, and a little bit of white sand and some water, and you stir up that glass of water and you look at it from the side, as that spinning vortex in the center slows up, you will see that it's depositing the heavy iron first and then the lighter sand next, and the tip of the vortex of water as it slows down starts to bob up and down. And this is very much akin to what is, I think happens in planets and stars with this weak gravitational force we're talking about, this new force. And that might be what they're talking about with the atomic force, because it exists at all levels of things that have spin in the fluid of space. End of story. Yep.
No, that's just fascinating. And I love the illustration because it's something that we can visualize very easily. This is from Tony from California. Do you have any information assembled yet to be able to say with a certainty that the comet Elenine is one and the same as Nibiru or Planet X?
No, I don't have any information on that, but I do find that its orbit and the coincidental earthquakes that we're having are quite unusual. Certainly the Earth was on the other side of the sun from Elenin when the Fukushima quake occurred, but we were directly in a line with it. It's on the other side of the sun. But the comet is then, it's still moving, obviously, and it's going to appear between the Earth and the sun around September, late September this year. And I expect that we will see some more activity, planetary-wise, because of that. But this E. Lennon comet is not like a narrow tail fantail. It's a wide fantail. I don't know why it's doing that. But for 2.5 months after that, we're going to be kind of picking up debris from it, at least that long.
Signs in the heavens. Signs in the heavens. One more question from Tony. Can you explain in more detail what you expect to happen when they come into alignment in September of this year? So that's, you were just saying that. You were just talking about that. You want to add a little bit to that, or is that good?
Well, that's fairly good. I don't think it's Nibiru, but, Nibiru, I don't even know that they've calculated the massive orbit of the E. Lennon comet yet. They've been taking samples of it, and, you know, you have to have a lot of samples to determine an orbit. And an orbit can be a closed orbit, like a circular, or it can be like an egg-shaped elliptical orbit, or it can be an open kind of hyperbolic thing that dives in and goes out there who knows where and may come back, but maybe not. So if that had an orbit of, 3,600 years, it'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Let me interject this here. All of Sitchin's work is, kind of iffy, the interpretation, is that correct?
Sure.
But. The fact that he was saying that there were beings living on this planet Nibiru, and the Anunnaki, that was their name, jumped off and came over to visit Earth when it was in close to the sun, and then jumped back on their planet and went on back out there into Never Neverland, it sprang to mind when I was looking at the temperatures and the orbits and stuff. A planet with a 3,600-year orbit that only comes in close to the sun maybe, total time maybe 12 to 20 years, and the rest of it is way out there. That would be so cold that how could you grow stuff? How could you live? How could you have a civilization? Until I suddenly discovered hollow Earth.
There you go.
And they could live inside their planet out there with their sun being the core of the planet, you see? And so now I'm thinking, well, maybe I better rethink this thought too, It's
interesting.
It is.
Very, very interesting. And what's interesting, along with that, we've had guests on our show talking about in deep underground caverns like in Tibet and in South America. There's no way to vet this stuff. I mean, it's science fiction, and I'm not saying I believe it. I'm just saying it's interesting information that there are giants, literally, Nephilim, in some sort of suspended animation. Oh, and perfect timing. Thank you, Producer Frank. This is Acceleration Radio, folks. We're talking to Stan Deo all over the place tonight. Fascinating, interesting discussion. Want to get on the program? You certainly can do that. 800-596-8191. We'll take callers now. 800-596-8191. Please don't email me anymore. I still have not gotten to all the other questions. We'll see you on the other side of the break, folks. Another half an hour left.
Americans for Immigration Control is a leading national organization dedicated to reasonable levels of legal immigration and effective enforcement to stop illegal immigration. With more than 250,000 members and supporters nationwide, we are an effective voice for immigration reform. AIC stands up in Washington for the views of most Americans on immigration. We are the leaders in stopping recent legislation to reward 10 million or more illegal aliens with legal status and eventual citizenship. The late Georgia Congressman Charlie Norwood had this to say about us: AIC has earned a reputation among members of Congress as one of the most active and responsive advocacy groups in the field of immigration. Join AIC today. For more information, go to our website, immigrationcontrol.com. That's immigrationcontrol.com, or call 540-468-2023. That's 540-468-2023.
I got held up in the briars, and that's when I looked up and saw it. And it made no noise. The trees didn't move, or the leaves blow away. Ricky Sorrell, Stephen to the Lights. I went into sort of a shock tailspin as I realized that the abductions were real, I said to myself, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, repeatedly for about 6 months. Dr. David Jacobs. They always communicated to me telepathically. An idea would come into my mind to go out and take pictures, or they would have me start drawing symbols, which was some type of language I had no knowledge of. They called it light language. The Alien Interviews is a hard-hitting exposé conducted with 17 people who have had direct contact with the so-called extraterrestrial presence. The Alien Interviews is now available in paperback for only $10. Get informed, as UFOs are real, burgeoning, and not going away. Go to lamarzulli.net, that's lamarzulli.net, and pick up your copy of The Alien Interviews, www.lamarzulli.net.
Can your family survive a food shortage lasting 2 weeks, 6 months, or maybe longer? Sound far-fetched? We live in precarious times. There is an ever-increasing possibility of food shortages caused by terrorist attacks, natural disasters, truck strikes, or monetary collapse. You owe it to yourself and family to prepare, and you can by getting a supply of our long-storing, freeze-dried, and dehydrated foods. Our foods are time-tested to store for decades, require a minimum of time and energy to prepare while maintaining superior nutritional value, freshness, and taste. Our foods were designed for the space program and are in constant use today by our own nuclear submarine service. Contact the Freeze Dry Guy today at freezedryguy@landsat.com. That's freezedryguy@landsat.com or call 530-265-8333. 530-265-8333 and let them know you heard it on American Voice Radio.
Back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your intrepid host, L.A. Marzulli. You're listening to Acceleration Radio. Our guest tonight, Stan Deo, www.standeo.com. Standeo.com. Check out his stuff there, folks. You want to apprise yourself of this information. We have a caller here from Steve from Virginia. Steve, welcome to Acceleration Radio. Do you have a comment or a question for Stan?
Put that down. Hello?
Hi, Steve.
Hello? Yes, hi. Yes, I wanted to ask, in light of the what was mentioned about the Four Corners area, and that will, I guess, eventually be one area that, after this destruction, that people would congregate in. Would Mr. Deo have any comment about the Northwest, about the Montana area as well, or Utah? I guess you part of Utah is, of course, is it in that Four Corners area.
Well, Steve,
a safer area to be.
Stan.
All right, Steve. That's going what the Hopi told us. Personally, I'd rather be off the planet, you know, wrapped out here. But if I had to pick a place, I would certainly pick middle to southern Colorado, very northern Arizona, very northern New Mexico, and very southern Utah. The problem with Utah, Holly and I have been all over the state and fossicked around. The Salt Lake City area is very prone to perhaps even an explosive volcanic activity when the Earth's crust starts to crumble a bit. It's it could be really bad there. And it's also very close to the Yellowstone caldera area. And should that go, it may release those things. So I'm thinking that Utah is probably a better place to be from than to be during these changes. And in fact, let me tell you this: we have a number of LDS or Mormon friends who have already shared with us about that they're making plans to bus people out to Colorado when the changes start, to get them out of that area. So there must be something to that.
Yeah, we had seen a map on the internet about the 100 mile and 500 mile area of destruction if that caldera goes, and then there was a 1,000 mile radius, which was referencing the volcanic ash, and so that was something we were looking at as well.
Okay, Steve. Now that's looking at a supermassive you know, a major eruption of that caldera, and we're not sure that that will happen this time, if it goes in our lifetime at all. As I was explaining earlier on the show, I think that the pressure releases that are going to occur on the West Coast from the Juan de Fuca plate release and the Cascade fault line may well reduce the amount of pressure that an eruption at the northwest corner of Yellowstone might have. Certainly it is showing activity at the moment, and it's showing harmonic tremor activity, which means magma moving up. But I don't think that we're going to have as large a radius of damage as we did 630,000 years ago. The Earth's crust was a totally different beastie at the time. However, having said that, you don't want to be in that ashfall region unless you wear a mask for a long time, because it's a particulate glass that cuts your lungs a bit, and it infects them, and you will die of pneumonia, if nothing else. You'll bleed internally. So in your lungs, very minor cuts and abrasions from that that ash. So it's best not to be in that. But I don't think it's going to be like 500-mile radius or something like that. Okay. It depends on the prevailing winds as well.
Mm-hmm. Steve, thanks so much for calling in. Really appreciate it. Let's take an email question here. Does Stan think that Japan could have been attacked by Russians or Chinese HAARP? That was from Steve Wilson. Thank you, Steve.
Say that again. Say that again, L.A.
Okay. Does Stan think that Japan could have been attacked by Russia or Chinese HAARP weaponry?
I think that's kind of already been addressed earlier in the show when I said that it might be a war between, you know, China, Russia, and the United States, and that maybe we bounced it back toward them, and that's where it ended up.
Sure.
I don't think that we would have done that, for sure. And, of course, if it was one of our major dollar supporters, maybe the Chinese did do it. I mean, it'd be a great coup to take down Japan, but who knows?
There's certainly no love loss there. That goes back centuries, and we look it just wouldn't surprise me, but who knows? Let's get another question here. This is from Jason. Okay, Jason, thanks so much for listening. Can Stan touch on how he thinks Planet X plays into these Earth changes? Stan, you want to take that?
Well, again, we've got to see that there is a Planet X, and I'm still kind of holding judgment at the moment. I know there is an orbit for it that corresponds to the legends, but if any massive object, whether it be a brown dwarf, you know, or whether it be a large planetoid type thing like a gas giant, if anything moves in close to us, we should be able to see it, or even amateur astronomers. And if it does, there are two fields to worry about. It's normal gravitational mass that we calculate with standard physics, and the other is its containment or shaping field, that weak gravitational field, that spinning vortex like in the water glass analogy. And that's a weaker field, a weaker nuclear field, a weaker interplanetary field. But if that surrounds that planet, so when it comes into our system in the inner planet region and dives in from a high angle, that outer ring will shake our ring, and that will then produce effects on the Earth. So if it is there, and if it is close, yes, it could affect us, even if it doesn't come within, you know, the distance of the moon even. It could be, you know, half an orbit away. It could still affect us. All right.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Was I on mute just then?
You were on mute.
Oh, sorry. Here I am going. I'm feeling three different things at once, and I just dropped the ball. We've got caller Richard. There you go. We've got caller Richard here from Long Island for coming back for another question. Richard, what was your follow-up question for Stan?
Stan, I want to thank you for elaborating on your opinion of digital mathematics, and I think you brought a very interesting point relating to the North and South Pole, which scripturally I think you're really onto something. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of a physicist named Nassim Harriman. Although many of his lectures are extremely esoteric in nature, he does go on about the unified theory as far as cosmology and the potentiality of black holes in the center of each planet. I don't know what you would think about that as far as the hollow Earth theory relating to the North and South Pole, etc. I think you kind of understand the point I'm, direction I'm going in. If you could give me your opinion on his work, I know it's in peer review for a publication in some.
Well, Richard, you know, aware of that. That's a really interesting question, because I have wondered that myself. The galaxies, apparently, the astronomical community has said that they have now determined that every galaxy has a supermassive black hole in its center. And then when I apply my weak gravitational confinement field theory to, say, like a star, like our star, the Sun, it would form layers or shells within it. Now, there is a finite point down in the center of the Sun where I think that we would have maybe not a supermassive black hole, but the equivalent of a black hole, where the energy is so concentrated in the spin down in that very fine point that it would be like a black hole. The reason I'm saying this is recent analyses of data coming out of the Sun and the magnetic field at the north and south poles of it is that there are frequent magnetic storms emitting out of the north and south pole, which I would expect if there were a periodic opening from a small black hole in the center there, because it has to release the energy just like that spinning water analogy I made, where the tip of the vortex goes up and down. Now, if that's the case, then we could say that the same rule may apply to planets, to atoms. It's quite an interesting philosophical discussion and consideration. So I would not discount his work. I'd like to see, you know, the peer review comments on it. That's, you know, I tend to agree with him.
Well, thanks for your call, Richard.
Yeah, I thought his work was very interesting. I do not like the esoteric nature of it, but it is very interesting how the atoms seems to have much of their focus on the Sun, which I think is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm.
Richard, thanks so much for calling in, and let's take another email. This is from another Richard, actually a friend of mine, and Richard Grun. He asked, was Tesla murdered to take his designs to be used for their current purposes, as he was against them being used for that? To stand by into the polar reversal on 12/21/12. Are the fallen angels using the electromagnetic frequencies from the earthquakes to their advantage?
Well, let's take the first question about Tesla. That's easier. Tesla, I investigated the man quite in depth a few years back in 1983, I think it was, and actually participated and was the presenter of a documentary on his work and his life. Hmm. As part of that, I interviewed his nephew,
wow,
who was senior management at RCA Global in New York. And he told me that he told me about Tesla's later years, Uncle Nicky. And one of the problems that Tesla had, we think, was he had a cancer in his stomach. He gradually stopped eating meats and heavy things and was reduced to drinking warm milk from a saucer or a glass, you know, at home or sometimes in the restaurants. He couldn't keep the other stuff down. So I don't know that they would need to have taken him out. He was weak and frail. He just was going on his own. I did talk with one of the men, a physicist who's now passed on himself, but who opened up the secret weapon that Tesla had wrapped up in paper at the Hotel New Yorker where he was staying as a surety against the debt he owed them. He was broke. He was old. He was frail. He was sick. And certainly his safe was open when the Yugoslav consulate representatives came in to get his effects, and some of the effects were taken to the property of alien custody and lockup there for the FBI to use. Again, this is all firsthand information I got from them, but no, I don't think they assassinated him. I think he just went on natural causes, and he was probably very disappointed with the world that didn't see what he was trying to give them.
Amazing, especially the free energy part. The second question is, do you buy into the polar reversal on 12/21/12, obviously the Mayan calendar again?
Well, I don't know. There is a slight dating error even in the Mayan calendar interpretation of
I've heard that too. It's more like September or October or something, yeah.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I'm still trying to get data in from the 100 volunteers that have been running tests for us on the change in the gravitational field of the Earth, which also is tied to the magnetic field and another vector of it. But we are seeing changes right now. over the last 2 years, in fact. So there may be a change, magnetic field reversal coming. I can understand that in the new theory I'm proposing on the containment gravitational field. It's like that glass of water thing. When the water is spinning up really fast, you don't see the tip of that vortex of water bobbing at all, but it starts to slow down as it ages and slows down. You'll see that tip go up and down, up and down. And part of that, I think, down underneath that tip is a slight reversal, a flip-flop of some vectors in there, which could happen to our magnetic field. So whether it will happen on, you know, a certain date, I don't know yet. We're still so far away from having hard equations for that and hard data that I couldn't predict it, so I don't know.
I call 2012 a self-fulfilling stage prophetic event, but I digress. Last question. There you go. Last question. Are fallen angels using the EMFs from the earthquakes to their advantage? That's a great question.
It is? What would they use it for?
Power up, give them energy.
Well, not knowing the real nature of these fallen ones and how their bodies work, I don't know. I thought they were kind of like us, maybe a bit taller. But if I were them going after energy, I wouldn't sit around waiting for earthquakes. I think I'd have a better source, like, you know, thermionic converters or something like that that are that are constant energy sources. So, you know, I'm kind of in the dark there. I don't know how to answer that.
Okay. Let me what is this? Okay, folks, if you're – Stan, you don't want to take any Nephilim stuff tonight, do you? We're into this whole – we're kind of in a little niche here, and I don't see us, you know, losing it or moving away from it unless you want to. I've got a couple of questions on the Nephilim. Do you want to tackle anything like that tonight, or should we just stay where we are?
Well, it depends. I mean, if I can answer it, I will. But
We're down like 12 minutes. Let me just take one, okay? Let's just see where Edward is going. Oh, my gosh. Too much. He's written three paragraphs. That's not going to work tonight. Okay, let's go to another one. Sorry, Edward. I'll have to answer that a little bit later. Richard Terry writes, he's a regular listener here, and in fact, hats off to you, Richard. It was Richard that suggests I call you and have you back on. And so from time to time, Richard does that, and he always hits a nerve usually, and I take his counsel, and I called you, and here we are, Stan. So let's take one of Richard's questions.
Why not?
There you go. What are your thoughts, Stan, about the return of a Nephilim? I mean, prior to the rapture.
I think that there are factions of them here already. When you say the Nephilim, I don't know whether they'll be like 30-foot giants.
I don't think they will be. I think it's a whole different paradigm. The second part of that question is: Are UFOs what will make men's hearts fail?
I think more. Well, that could contribute to it as you get further into the tribulation. But I think in the beginning, that our hearts will fail from celestial events, you know, or like solar storms that are burning our trees and our grass, like the Bible says, and some kind of an asteroid or a meteor hitting the oceans and killing the fish and the life in it. And I mean, you know, and pandemic diseases sweeping the planet and radiation causing sores and killing people. These would kind of make you think, oh, holy cow, I'm in trouble. And then especially if the economy fails and we're faced with a nuclear war, which would really accelerate the nuclear threat, you know, to individuals, people's, you know, they'd say, what can I do? Where can I go? I can't escape. Ah, you know, and you can see the fear.
Sure.
But you can also see how when the Antichrist offers a solution through through the technology given to him by Satan and the fallen ones and says, look, I can bring peace to you. I can get rid of the radiation. I can solve your economic woes. We'll stop the pandemics and there won't be any more war. Oh, well, now then everybody kind of gets peaceful and then suddenly it erupts again and you start to see these beings that are behind all this. And in the translation of Daniel, in the early part of Daniel, which I put in the Cosmic Conspiracy in the latest edition at the end of it, it tells about the earth being divided up into 10 regions. And that some of these regions are given over to the alien god, the people in that region and the regions as payment by the Antichrist to the alien god Satan, posing as a god. to him as payment for the technology and the control that the Antichrist was given over the planet using his technology. So when you start seeing, you know, like V, where they eat you or something, and certainly there's that kind of, well, you laugh, but there's that kind of.
I know. I shouldn't be laughing. I'm sorry.
Well, even the old legends of the giants of the old days talk about
cannibals. Absolutely.
That's right. Yeah. So, and I see that in Daniel when I retranslated that, you know, piece by piece. And when I saw that, I thought, wow, you know, you wouldn't want to be there because that would scare the heck out of you being on a
absolutely.
Dinner plate.
We have another question from Richard, and this is fascinating. He writes, L.A. and Stan, can you tell us about the visions you both have had and what you think they mean? Is there a time frame for either of your visions? What is your gut feeling about the rapture occurring soon? Let's do the visions first. You want to go first, and then I'll give mine in a very – we're down about less than 10 minutes, so we've got to give the Reader's Digest thumbnail sketch of these visions. You go first, Stan.
Okay, well all right, I've already told you about the Tapo vision, and that was so real that I was able to go there with Holly for the first time and direct her inside of a motel on the edge of the lake that I saw there, you know, the caldera, into rooms exactly where I saw it in the vision. So I know that that one's correct and coming soon. And we know the precursor event that the Maori woman told us about. And then I had the dream vision of the 6 to 8 volcanoes running from the Cascades all the way down to Mexico City, erupting simultaneously, throwing ash, wet ash, over the roads. Cars were slipping off and everything as the western United States started to break up and into islands and portions collapsing. What else? Oh, and another dream vision, which I've mentioned, I'm living part of it now. The last part of it was that Holly and I would join together here in Colorado in an effort to wake up the watchman of the church when a certain sign appeared over the northern part of California in the nighttime sky, like slow falling, burning ash. And that would signal the beginning of something. And I remember turning around to the several hundred watchmen who were in tents covered with web that I had to reach through to wake them up and saying, look, you know, reaching through the web, the internet, you've overslept. The time is upon you. It begins now. And I'm still thinking the it may be the time of the beginning of the tribulation, because the man of sin has to be revealed before we're taken out.
I agree.
Might be seconds or whatever, or
I
days.
Agree.
But I told them, all right, go back and tell your people now. It begins now. And okay, that's enough. Three of those. What are yours?
Well, I actually saw the Gulf oil spill before it happened. Same thing in a dream. I was standing on a concrete platform someplace, looking out into the ocean. I was not on land. I was in the ocean someplace, looking out, and all I saw was this fire coming out of the ocean, flames hundreds of feet in the air. And I was going, "What am I looking at?" And I awakened and told it to my wife. And then we called two friends, and I told them the vision, and they didn't know what I was looking at. Well, about 2 weeks after that, on Fox News, I'm looking at the Gulf oil spill. The exact picture that I saw was being shown, you know, and I about fell out of my chair. It was just unbelievable. The second one, which has not yet happened that I'm aware of, I believe it takes place in California. I know the house. I'm walking down to it. I don't know the owner in the house, but I do know, I think, where the house is. And I get there, and I get in the front door, and I'm standing in about 2 to 3 inches of water. I'm looking down at the oriental rugs, and because everything is wet, the whole floor is wet, all the colors are just really vibrant in the seawater, you know, magnified, and just because they're all wet, they're very, 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 very vivid colors. And the room is well furnished, and to the right of me is a tall, burly man, and I ask him, how bad is it? He goes, it's over the rafters on the first floor. And he motions for me to come to these shuttered windows, and he throws open the shuttered windows, and I'm looking out at the Pacific, and it's absolutely raging, just raging. And that, I don't think that's, I don't believe it's happened yet. But, you know, that's why I think something is coming. But my gut feeling about the rapture occurring soon, I don't, quite honestly, I'd love to go yesterday. On some level, I really, honestly, Richard, I try not to think about it. It's something that I'm so involved in what I'm doing, books and videos and talking to people, trying to warn people of what is coming. I believe that, you know, Yeshua will take us out when we're supposed to be taken out. It's not, I don't concern myself with that. I concern myself with staying in the game, fighting the fight, destroying the works of the enemy, and alerting as many people as I possibly can of what is coming on the earth. What's your views there, Stan?
I'm in complete agreement with you. I do feel it is imminent, but I do feel that the deception, the flying saucer, you know, we are your creator, God type deception, that has to come first.
I agree.
And, that is with the increase of UFO sightings and all this kind of stuff, and the motion pictures, you know, about V and all this, that's all getting the public awareness to focus that way. It just reminded me of another dream vision I had, which was a long involved thing, but I'll condense it. Basically, I was watching a whole caravan of people who were, you know, Christian people, but they weren't kind of studying their Bible and aware of the warnings. And they were driving along a country road past this little gas station kind of convenience shop that I was standing in. And they were going off to a secret location in the desert there to see the Messiah, you know, and it was they were being misled. They were going right to the Satan, you know, and as I say, I've condensed the dream vision down here to tell you this, but there was a lot more to it. And it's basically the message was, don't be deceived by him if he says, come see me in this secret place or that place, like Matthew 24 says.
Sure.
Because that will be a lie. The real creator, the real Yeshua ben Elohim, will absolutely dazzle the entire planet all at once. There won't be any secret. He will be there. You won't have to go to some secret place to see him. So anyway, I put that as the last warning in the final edition of the Cosmic Conspiracy. Don't be deceived. And that was from that dream vision.
Well said. We're down about a minute. I just had an urgent news, and this is really interesting. I'm going to post this tomorrow. What the heck is this? And I just clicked on it, and it actually it looks like it takes you to the NSA government, but this could be a hoax. So I'm not sure. It says when you take Illuminati backwards, you come up with itanamuli.com, and that takes you to the NSA government's website. But that could be a ruse. I didn't have time to check out whether it's the real NSA.gov website. I mean, that could just be the whole part of the spoof, isn't it? So you get on the page, but you find out that none of the links work, and it's not interactive. So until I vet that, it's interesting. But
I'm looking at it, too.
Yeah.
I got the same notice.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you think?
I'm looking at the source code. You do the same thing when you get time. Pull down and look at the source code.
You know, folks, that's it. We just didn't have enough time tonight. Stan, thanks so much for coming on the record. Really, really appreciate it. Folks, this
my
is
pleasure.
Thank
Talk
you, Stan.
To you again.
Okay, God bless.
Bye.
You've been listening to Acceleration Radio. I'm your intrepid host, L.A. Marzulli. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you back here next week with another 2 hours. I'm checking out this this NSA.gov. Pretty strange, folks. Not sure what I'm looking at here yet. Very, very interesting. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. Check out the Watchers DV if you have not gotten it, or go to my website and purchase one of my books or DVDs, or go to standale.com. This is what we do, and we're trying to inform and arm you with necessary information. That's it for tonight, folks. We'll see you again here next week. Remember, I'll see you either on the air or in the air. Good night, everybody.